Before we get started with this episode, I wanted to let you know that May is Mental Health Awareness Month. In honor of this, I'm making my signature course, Resiliency Sprint, 50% off just for podcast listeners. You also get lifetime access to CVT Family Toolbox, over 100 activities, resources, and ideas to bring cognitive behavioral tools to your family. Head to childanxietysupport.com/resiliencysprint to learn all about this foundational course. And when you sign up, use code PODCAST to get 50% off both the coached and uncoached versions. This offer is only good till May 31st, so make sure you sign up now. Welcome everyone to the podcast for You Are Not Your Mother, the podcast for parents who feel like they were raised by wolves and want to do things differently with their own kids. It turns out that June 24th is National Burnout Day, and it sure seems like we're all feeling burned out. I know I am. I'm burned out with parenting. I'm burned out with trying to navigate pandemic advice and what to do about masks and not masks. I'm frustrated with the lack of information that would help me open up my office safely. With all of that, this is why I chose to interview Michelle Risser this month. Michelle is a licensed therapist specializing in perinatal mental health. She practices here in Columbus, and she's also a coach working with moms who are therapists. What a perfect guest, right? Over the next 30 minutes, Michelle and I go all in on what exactly is burnout, how she sees it showing up in moms, what are their particular challenges, I should say, our particular challenges in getting the help and support we need, how receiving a breast cancer diagnosis helped her realize that she needed to get real about what mattered to her in life, and how mindfulness made that possible for her. She also gives some tips on how to bring mindfulness into your own life, explaining how it's different than meditation, and gives us an overview of the differences between stress, chronic stress, and burnout. So join me in hearing what she has to say. Let's get right into it. Hi, Michelle. Thank you so much for joining me today. Can you tell me a little bit more about yourself and what you're doing?
Hi, Dawn. I am a licensed therapist specializing in perinatal and postpartum mental health. I work with a lot of birth trauma using EMDR. And I've really found that therapy is wonderful, but not everyone needs therapy. A lot of people just need tools and support and skills that they can learn. And that's how I came to wanting to offer coaching.
And of course, you decided to focus on therapists like me who are also moms who are maybe dealing with burnout. Can you tell us more about what is burnout? How does somebody know if they're burnout?
Some of the signs of burnout are exhaustion. If you start dreading your day, if you're noticing that you're having trouble concentrating, if you are having insomnia, feeling disconnected from others, really, it's a point where stress has become exhaustion that has now crossed a line that's really hard to come back from.
Do you find that moms know when they've crossed that line, or do you find that they blame themselves for not functioning better?
I think they blame themselves for not functioning better. I think you hit the nail on the head with that.
What's the kind of negative self-talk that the moms you work with are telling themselves?
I should be doing more. I'm never doing lots of shoulds and nevers. If you're hearing a lot of shoulds and nevers, then it's quite possible that you're dealing with some mom guilt, which is another precursor to burnout. But yeah, it's I'm not doing enough. I should be doing more. I should be doing things differently. I'm missing out on my kids' lives. I'm exhausted. I feel defeated. I'm overwhelmed.
How long have you been working with moms?
I've been working with moms for over a decade. I started my private practice in 2010, I believe we met not long after that, and the training for maternal mental health. And I've been specializing in moms ever since I went into private practice.
Why did you want to specialize in working with moms?
I had an aha moment. I was trying to discern what I wanted my focus area to be. And it occurred to me that if we can help moms, we help the world, because moms are so pivotal. And, you know, that saying is moms know how to push your buttons because they put them there. Moms put good stuff there too, you know? So I feel like if we can help moms learn to love themselves and to overcome their trauma and their emotional and mental struggles, that we can really help the world.
What made you decide that you wanted to add coaching to your repertoire?
One thing I'd like to be able to add down the road is possibly some group coaching programs, possibly a membership site like your own, maybe some retreats down the road. I love the idea of being able to host a retreat. And by doing this within my coaching business, it really keeps those lines clear, the difference between therapy and coaching. So to use a sports metaphor, if you think about your track coach, what do? They help you to build your muscles, build your skills. They teach you how to get better and better and better at what you are doing so that you can perform optimally. A therapist would be more akin to fixing the broken leg, maybe referring you to physical therapy if you need a different kind of treatment. Your coach is going to teach you the tools and the skills that you need to really be able to shine and perform optimally and reach your goals. So I feel like in coaching, we can do even more because we're not just treating disorders. We're actually helping people step into their most powerful and their most joyful lives.
When we're talking about burnout, mm-hmm. can you tell me more about how you might help someone who's feeling burned out?
I always say, and I would say this in therapy or coaching, if sleep is an issue, let's start there. So I would want to know, how are you sleeping? Are you sleeping too much or not enough? I would want to know, are you connecting with others? Even if it is over Zoom, you know, are you connecting with others outside of your children or your immediate family? Are you getting out of the house at all? Do you feel like you have any piece of yourself still? Like, do you get time to yourself? What did you used to enjoy before you became a mother or before the pandemic? And have you been doing that thing? So those are some of the things that I might start with. And then just sort of try to tease down what's the first domino that needs to fall in order for this person to feel okay again.
What do you think are going to be some challenges for moms post-pandemic life?
It may feel a bit like the first time your kindergartner ever got on the bus, you know, or the first time you dropped your baby off at their childcare provider when you first went back to work after they were born, or the first time you sent your kids to a play date. That feeling of, oh my goodness, is my child okay? Am I okay?
I think one of the things that's going to be really challenging about this is we rely on our peers for these mm-hmm. decisions a lot. And it's pretty clear to me that we all have different ideas about what feels safe and appropriate for us. And then our children all have really different needs. So I don't know how much help our peers might be. They mm-hmm. might make the decision making even more challenging.
That's an excellent point. And I think there could be a lot of pressure to jump back into normal, maybe before we're ready. And normal has quotes around it, you know, whatever yeah. normal looks like after this. All moms have our struggles. There's no doubt about that. But the thing that I really think of when I think of working moms specifically is just how torn we always feel. If we're at work, we feel torn because we feel like we should be more available for our children. If we're not at work, we feel guilty that we're not getting our work done. Stay-at-home moms have other struggles, certainly. Don't get me wrong, but they don't have that feeling of, oh my God, it's a snow day. I have 8 clients and school is closed. And what am I going to do? You know, and that feeling is heart stopping. If you've ever been there as a mom, oh my goodness, that was one of the hardest things for me as a working mom was if something came up, like if the child was sick and or school was closed, just that utter panic feeling of what am I going to do? And I work in a field and being in private practice where I don't have sick time. I can't call off. At the time, I couldn't work from home. Now I can, you know, so this year that was a little bit different, but in the past I didn't have that option. So it was just a mad scramble of either finding childcare or canceling all of my appointments and just feeling like no matter which way I went, I was letting someone down and I was failing. I felt like I was failing at doing both.
How have you made sense of that?
Well, I finally had to hit a breaking point with it. Unfortunately, I was diagnosed with breast cancer after a period of just really, really feeling burnout. My husband was traveling for work and I had that feeling of, I kept thinking I would have crushed it as a full-time mom or a working single lady, but I'm failing at trying to do both. And I got to a point where I felt like, okay, let's eliminate everything that is not absolutely necessary out of my schedule. So what that meant was all I did was work, parent, and sleep. Like there was no room left for any joy in my life. There was no room left for friends or anything to look forward to. And I really got into a depression and I was struggling. And then what happened was lo and behold, boom, breast cancer diagnosis. Not long after that, pandemic hits. And I had no choice but to cut my schedule way, 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 way back and to work from home. For me, balance is about the beauty and the joy of being able to do something simple, like go outside and water my garden. Because the way I would usually do that is I would plant the garden and then I would let it die because I'm never home. And just to be able to putz around the yard, water the garden, feed the birds, you know, have breakfast with my kid. It was just magical. And I thought, gosh, it took getting cancer to be able to do this. I don't want other people to have to go through something like that, to be able to say, it's okay to want to read your book, to water your garden, to need to take a breath. If you need to take a week away from your family and go to an island, go. I wish I could do that. You know, the point I'm trying to make is it's okay to fill our own cup. We don't have to wait to the point that we're depleted to the point of a health crisis.
I think that's such a challenge though. And I think that some of the people who are listening right now are saying, but you don't know my life. My life is exceptionally busy or exceptionally demanding. And I know that you appreciate that that's where she's coming from.
Absolutely.
What would you want to say to her to just let her crack that door open a little bit to how things could be different?
Well, you know, I have done this before and I would probably not hesitate to do this in this case. Okay, if your life is exceptionally challenging, let's look at that. What's going on? If your life is so stressful that you are running on constant chronic stress, that's a problem. So what do we need to look at as far as your routines, as far as your expectations, obligations? Because if your life is truly that busy that you can't take 20 minutes to read a book or go for a walk around the block, there's a problem. So what can we start to strip away?
So you might need fresh eyes on that if that's happening.
Mm-hmm. What? And you might already know that that's happening. There's a really good chance, but you just may not know how to break that cycle.
What are the messages that moms get in this culture that gets them in that place in the first place?
That they have to do everything for everyone perfectly, and they have to look great doing it. They have to make it look easy. They have to work as if they don't have children, and they have to parent as if they don't work. And then you throw in all the school expectations, like you have to bring the cookies for the party and you have to be the room mom and you have to, and then there's the sports and, you know, they have to, that's the overall message, is they have to be everything to everyone and never bat an eye. And it's impossible.
So it sounds like part of your recovery was mindfulness, that when you're talking about watering your plants and being in the garden.
Absolutely.
Can you tell me more about that?
I love mindfulness. It's changed my life more than anything I've ever done. I love practicing it. I love sharing it and teaching it. Yes, through my diagnosis, absolutely. Just being able to be present, to me, mindfulness is, it's really quite simple. Simple doesn't mean easy, but it's really just tuning into the present moment, using your senses, so your external environment, and also using your breath as a way to focus back into the present moment, being able to notice your thoughts without letting them run away with you. For example, when I was going through my, especially the diagnosis part of breast cancer was really terrifying. The treatment was no fun, but initially being diagnosed was terrifying. And to just try to remember that, okay, these are body sensations. These are emotions. These are thoughts. Those are not me. Those are things I'm experiencing, but those are not who I am. I'm still me. I'm still here.
Can you let us know too? How are you doing right now? How's your
health? I'm doing great. Thank you for asking. Yes, I'm cancer free.
Yay.
Yeah, my treatment was effective and everything's good. So
it's interesting. People always think therapists have it all together.
Oh goodness.
Yeah. And especially with your EMDR background, mm-hmm. I know that you already have some of the training that let you access this. Why weren't you accessing it before?
I think I just let myself get too overwhelmed. You know, I let it get too far away and I would still try to practice my mindfulness, but what I would be aware of is that I felt depressed or that I felt exhausted.
Something that I've heard clients say is they don't want mindfulness because they don't want to be in their bodies. They don't want to be mm-hmm. aware. So yeah. What would you say to that person?
They're correct. I mean, they're not wrong. Mindfulness does not expect that you're going to feel good or that you're going to wipe away any of the negative thoughts or emotions. But what mindfulness does is it helps you to accept and to stop fighting against the reality, because so much of the distress that we feel is because we're fighting against what we're actually feeling, you know? So to be able to practice mindfulness and think, okay, I don't feel well. I feel tired. I feel depressed. And then I could do something about that.
First, you have to accept where you're at.
Right. First, you have to be aware of where you're at, right? You have to even notice. So many times we run around on autopilot and we don't even know where we're at.
Do you find then that your coaching clients, do they know where they're at?
A lot of times, no. I mean, you probably wouldn't be surprised because I'm sure you've heard this too, but I can't believe how often I ask people, what do you like to do? And they say, I don't know. Or I'll say, what are you feeling right now? And they'll say, well, I feel like they took advantage of me because X, Y, Z. And I'll say, no, that's a thought. That's not a feeling. So I really do feel like a lot of people are. See, I just used a feeling word for a thought. I do that too. I think that a lot of people aren't really in tune with what they're thinking, feeling, experiencing. We just kind of go through the motions of our day.
I think that's especially true for parenting parents, that mm-hmm. there really isn't time to think about how you're feeling about anything.
Absolutely. Especially during this pandemic when, you know, you're trying to, if you're not working from home, you're still trying to maintain all the things that you do during the day just to keep the household running. And now you've got the kids at the kitchen table trying to do virtual school. Yeah, it's too much.
Well, and oh my gosh, doesn't a house get dirtier when everybody's living in it all the time? Like,
oh, I cannot believe how often I run the dishwasher. Uh-huh. I am running that thing every day.
What's an example of an assignment you might give to a client who's looking to add more mindfulness into her life? I know that sometimes you recommend a 21-day challenge. So what might that look like?
So an example is one day it was to listen to a song mindfully. Without doing anything else, just listen to the song, notice the instruments, notice the harmonies. Another day it was to go on a walk and to focus your attention inward on your breath and then switching it to the outside environment. So notice the sky and the trees. So each day there's another little challenge. My hope is that people will feel more present. And honestly, my hope is that they will feel calmer because they now have tools to be able to stop their thoughts from running away. You know, you don't want your negative thoughts spinning out or running away like a train. You want to be able to focus your attention back on the present.
I know a lot of people confuse mindfulness with meditation.
Yes.
And they say, I can't do mindfulness because my brain won't stay still.
Yes. Such an excellent point. So that is the beauty of mindfulness. That's why I fell in love with it, is it doesn't expect that your brain is going to stay still. Mindfulness expects that as human beings, we think. We are in our minds. We have minds that think. They chatter. That's normal. It's healthy. And so there is no expectation that you're going to be sitting cross-legged, perfectly zen, with white sheets blowing behind you on the beach outside the window. You know, your mind is going to be chattering and busy. But what you, with practice, what you can do is you can just notice, my mind is chattering. And then you gently pull your attention back to whatever you're focusing on, whether it's your breath or whether it's a sound or whether it's a tree gently waving in the breeze. It helps you to not get so hooked in your thoughts. So the example I always use is my grocery list. I sit down to do my mindfulness practice, otherwise known as meditation. The way I see the difference is meditation is more formalized. So it's more like you would sit, you would set a timer, and you would say, okay, I'm going to focus on my breath for 5 minutes, 10 minutes, whatever it is. That's a type of mindfulness practice, but there's also informal mindfulness practice, which is just throughout the day as you're driving mindfully, you're eating mindfully, you're going on a walk mindfully, et cetera. So with the grocery list example, I might sit down to do my meditation and I notice, okay, I'm starting to make my grocery list. A mindfulness practice would be to say, okay, I notice that I'm trying to make my grocery list and I'm pulling myself back to my breath. And you just let the grocery list float by. What we normally do, or at least what I normally do, is, oh, I'm noticing my grocery list. Okay, I need tomato sauce. I need mushrooms. And then I'm off and running, like I'm gone. So a mindfulness practice is about noticing it without judgment. Just, oh, I'm trying to plan. I'm trying to think. I'm thinking about that argument that I had yesterday. Okay, back to the breath. But your mind isn't going to be silent.
So it's the opposite of multitasking, really.
Exactly. Exactly. That's a great way to put it.
When you're working with moms, mm-hmm. where is mindfulness in that?
Mindfulness is at the very beginning, because the first thing I want them to be able to do is to calm their nervous systems and to be present. Because that's going to help them then be able to start to let some of those negative thoughts go, let some of the mom guilt go. To me, mindfulness is kind of the first domino that has to fall.
When we're talking about moms who are feeling burned out, I know that some of them say, if I let myself feel that feeling, I am not going to be able to get back out of it. Mm-hmm. What would you say to that?
That might be a red flag for me to ask, is she afraid she can't get back out of it because she's depressed? Is she masking depression by staying busy? Does she have more of a clinical level of anxiety that is keeping her mind constantly worrying? And, you know, that would be a red flag. Okay, let's find out more. What does that mean exactly?
So you would ask her to dig in a little deeper about that.
Because you don't want mindfulness to put you into the pit of despair.
This has been overwhelming for us. The pandemic has been overwhelming, and likely going back to quote unquote normal is going to be overwhelming.
Yes.
Can you talk about the range of healthy responses that people can understand that their functioning might look a variety of ways that is not typical for them in typical times?
Absolutely. I think we could possibly even argue that we've all been through a trauma. You know, the definition of trauma is when your own life or the life of someone that you love is either in danger or perceived to be in danger. And haven't we all been in that situation for the last year? And I've also been seeing a lot of what sounds like or looks like depression. But certainly all of us, even in a healthy, pretty well-functioning person, is going to have some struggles. It feels like everyone I talk to has their sleep affected one way or another. They're either sleeping way more or they can't sleep. the constantly being bombarded with bad news for so many months on end. So I definitely think that within a normal, healthy range of functioning, there's going to be some sadness, some stress, some worry, some anxiety, some your routine is going to be disrupted. You may feel overwhelmed. A couple of things that might indicate that it is a little more leaning towards a clinical issue might be if your appetite has changed, or when people say things like, everything feels hard. I just can't get off the couch. Everything feels hard. All I want to do is sleep. My appetite has changed. Either I'm not eating at all or I'm eating all the time. You know, those are things that might be a red flag. But as far as coping with difficult thoughts and emotions that come up in regards to the pandemic, that's normal.
We've all been feeling so burned out. What are some of the typical signs? I've heard that losing track of words can be a sign of burnout.
Oh, absolutely. And I see that all the time in myself, my clients, and my friends. We'll all just lose our train of thought, lose what we were, our words, what we were going to say. Oh, yeah. I prefer to laugh about it because it's better than crying about it.
Well, and it's a mom brain thing too, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
I know that many people listening to this, their first thought is, what can I do for my family before they think, what can I do for myself?
I think that's absolutely true.
Yeah. So can you talk a little bit about, and it sounds like you were that person that you totally know where that person
is
coming from.
And I also know what it means to be a mom. And I had an aha moment about this a few years ago. You know, the saying, put your oxygen mask on first. We've all heard that. We need to put our own oxygen. If the plane is going down or if the plane loses pressure, you need to put your oxygen mask on first because you can't help anyone else if you're passed out, right? That makes perfect sense. I get the logic. But all of a sudden I had this aha moment of, wait a minute, we're moms. We're putting that mask on our kids. That's our instinct. You know, we need the mask on. We need to fill our cup, but that's just, it's automatic. We've already put the mask on our kids and we're passed out before we even realize what happened. So it takes a lot to override that and to really learn and get that it really is okay to take care of yourself. It's imperative. You can't be there for anyone else if you're not there for yourself first.
Why should she contact you then? What is it that you're going to help her figure out in putting that oxygen mask on?
Yes, I'm going to help her figure out that that's not selfish. Taking care of herself so that she can be the happiest and most present, joyful version of herself is the best gift she can give to her family.
Why is that? Why is that a great gift for her family?
Because she can show up and she can enjoy life and she can, and by show up, I mean, you know, emotionally and mentally be present and be connected and have her own life and her own life experience, you know, to be able to share with the family, with the kids, and to just serve as an example that it's okay to be happy and to have your own life and to love life. And also to remember that we are models for our children. So if we are martyrs and if we are constantly putting others first while we suffer, especially if we let others know that we're suffering, which a lot of moms do, either intentionally or not, that's not helping anybody. All that's doing is setting them up to do the same.
How have your relationships changed since you had this epiphany?
Wow, that's a good question. Well, I've learned that it is okay to have my own interests, to have my own needs, to have my own friends, to take a nap if I need to. It helps. I have to admit, it helps that I only have one child and she's old enough now that I can take a nap and she's okay. She's 11. You know, when you have little kids, this is a lot. It takes a lot more because you have to rely on help. You have to ask for help. You have to pull on your village to be there for you. And I think that that's another thing that pandemic has taken from us. Mm-hmm. As you know, if we were having this conversation a year ago, I might encourage that mom to really think about her systems in place. Is there another mom in the neighborhood who maybe you could trade with, or do you have neighbors, or is there another mom on the kids' softball team that you could carpool, or, you know, let's explore that. All that's gone. And that has certainly been another piece of what's made this so difficult. It's taken away our villages. Let me talk just very briefly about stress, chronic stress, and burnout.
Perfect. Go for it.
Okay. So there is healthy stress, which is when something comes along in your life that's challenging or stressful and our bodies kick in. And that's where that fight or flight response comes in. And this can actually be really healthy and even helpful. Stress can help us. It can propel us to try new things. It can give us the energy we need, say if we need to outrun a tiger or, you know, present at a conference or anything like, or even run to our child who needs some help. Stress can be a good thing, but stress is intended to be very, very short term. So whatever that threat is that your body perceives would pass quickly and you would return to your baseline and you would go about your life. But that's not what's happening, first of all, in our busy lifestyle, but specifically in the pandemic, as the chronic stress or the stress just keeps coming and coming and coming. And we never get to return to baseline. We'll put out this fire, we'll handle this stressor. And then here's another, something pops up on our phone about, you know, how the things aren't happening the way we expected, you know, just one thing after another. And then it becomes chronic stress. And what happens when we're in a cycle of chronic stress is we don't ever get to return back to our calm, to our baseline, to our homeostasis. We stay in this constantly escalated, elevated, stressed out state. And what that does is it releases cortisol, adrenaline, epinephrine into our body, which is very harmful over time. It can cause all sorts of health problems. So you have your healthy stress, which is a short-term stressor that comes and goes, and then that turns into chronic stress, which starts to impact your health. And it becomes harder to come back to your baseline. You might find yourself feeling more agitated, more irritated, more anxious. And then eventually burnout is like the collapse when it's like, I can't do this anymore. I'm exhausted. I'm overwhelmed. And you crash. And that's when you start dreading your days and you're losing concentration. And it's almost like you just check out, you become cynical. Like, none of this matters anymore. I give up.
You're describing my life.
You know, what's really messed up is I'm describing my own life as well.
We're
the experts. I have literally said to my therapy clients, you know, when those days where they're just like, oh, I can't do the pandemic anymore. And I'll say, I don't know what to tell you. And then we'll both just start laughing. Because I'm like, we all feel that way. Myself, I mean, here I am in my guest room doing therapy. I'm in a pandemic too. My kid's downstairs at the coffee table. You know, it's wild. Could I imagine.
I hope that interview with Michelle left you feeling validated and maybe gave you some good tips on how you might want to deal with your own burnout. And of course, if you want to learn more about Michelle, you can find her at Michelle Risser, R-I-S-S-E-R, counseling.com. That's to work with her as a therapist, Michelle Risser, counseling.com. And you can link to her coaching site there, or you can also go right to joyfulhappymom.com. And that's to get her coaching services. And again, she specializes in working with therapists who are also moms and who are trying to be good at both without burning out. She also has a group for therapist moms that's called the Burnout Proof Therapist Mom, and that's on Facebook. If I went through those too quickly and you're not clear how to get in touch with her, please reach out to me. I also wanted to follow up quickly on the discussion Michelle and I had there at the end that acknowledged that we have all lived through a trauma this past year. However the pandemic impacted us, it has been a traumatic event, and we're not really sure how that's going to look long term. Even though it is normal and healthy to be struggling post-pandemic, because it is a trauma, it is a major event, that doesn't mean that you don't deserve help. What I mean is, a lot of the times people will say, I don't have it as bad as somebody else, and so I should quit complaining and just get on with it. Well, first of all, I believe that we all need space to complain. We just need the right audience for it. And so I'm going to encourage you, if you are struggling, to just think about reaching out to a therapist. There's something called adjustment disorder. That's a DSM diagnosis, meaning that's an actual mental health diagnosis. It's adjustment disorder with depression or anxiety or both, or just adjustment disorder. What that means is something in your life has changed and you're struggling to adjust to it. So the lockdown was an adjustment, right? And now the unlockdown, the opening up, is another adjustment. And many of us are struggling. Even if in typical times, we might not meet criteria for a mental health diagnosis in order to get our insurance to cover counseling, many of us are going to meet criteria for an adjustment disorder. If you have questions about that, reach out to a therapist and talk to them. Adjustment disorder is kind of a catch-all diagnosis. By that, I mean a whole lot of different things fall under that. Moving, divorce, new job. And also, it's a diagnosis that it's temporary, because eventually you're going to adjust and things are going to get better. But that doesn't mean that you have to suffer alone. By all means, if you're struggling right now, reach out to a therapist. Talk to them about this. Talk to them about your concerns about getting a diagnosis, if that concerns you. Talk to them about an adjustment disorder and ask them, am I someone who meets criteria for that? And what kind of insurance do I have for that? Because different companies will offer different coverage for different kinds of diagnoses. Mostly what I'm saying is, it is okay to be having a hard time. It is normal and healthy to be having a hard time. But normal and healthy doesn't mean just suck it up, buttercup. Normal and healthy can mean, oh my gosh, I need someone to come alongside me and help me make sense of this. One of these days, I'll do a whole episode on how to find a therapist, because I think that's really hard. And it's even harder than usual right now, because most of us therapists, we're full. I'm full. I know Michelle is full. And also, some of us are burning out and taking time off, and that makes it even harder to find a therapist. But that doesn't mean it's impossible. Right now, in most of the country, telehealth rules still apply, which means you can look outside of your community possibly and find someone who's licensed in your state who you maybe can't drive to, but you could Zoom with. The other ways to find a therapist is ask around, ask your friends, talk to people. They can tell you a little bit about any therapist they've worked with that they like or dislike. You can call your insurance company. They'll give you a list. I will warn you, however, those lists are often outdated, and sometimes people will be on there who aren't taking that insurance any longer. And of course, a list of names doesn't mean anything. It doesn't mean they're going to be the right therapist for you, which is why I think getting recommendations is the way to go. The other thing is, if you're a mother, Postpartum Support International does keep track of therapists who have been through their postpartum mood disorder certification training. And those people do obviously specialize in postpartum, as Michelle and I do. But I know Michelle and I both work with moms in general, not just moms who are postpartum. So if you look up somebody on that list, you would at least know that that is somebody who understands the challenges of being a parent and is committed to caring about and learning about the challenges of being a parent. You can also contact Mental Health America. Many of them keep track of counselors in your locality and can give you some names there too. Finally, when you do call a therapist, if you get them on the phone and they tell you that they're full, ask them for some names. I try very hard to keep track of who's working in my community with what population so that I can give people names. Lately, it's been harder because, like I said, all my referral sources are full, but I do have access to a network, and I'm happy to reach out to that network and ask if anybody has availability. So go ahead and ask the people who call you back. If you have any questions or thoughts about finding a therapist, let me know. Go ahead and drop me an email at dawn@youarenotyourmother.com. I'd like to know How's it going for you? Those of you who are looking for a therapist, are you finding people with openings? Are you finding the kind of person you want to work with? Is there anything I can do to support you in figuring all of this out? Meanwhile, if you'd like to get more of You Are Not Your Mother, I encourage you to go to youarenotyourmother.com and learn more about the membership site, where you can get live support from me and from the other group members, as well as asynchronous courses. And we have special events that happen each month too. I'd love to have you there. It's a great group of women with just a ton of support. You can also go and listen to earlier episodes of the podcast, and I would love it if you would go ahead and subscribe, rate and review, share it with a friend. My enormous thanks to Michelle for coming on the podcast, and of course to my daughter Maddie, who wrote the intro and the outro and performed both. I hope that your summer is getting off to a good start. At least it's better than last year, right? Thanks, everyone. Bye-bye.